You're listening to the Market Leaders Podcast, brought to you by Pipeline Plus. Professional service firms use Pipeline Plus to capture more business from their most important clients, prospects, and referral sources. Pipeline Plus delivers the simplest interface in the marketplace and in-app suggestions on exactly which actions to take to close the next deal. It's used as a standalone app, in conjunction with business development coaching, or as a CRM companion for more effective sales pipeline management. To learn more or schedule a demo, visit pipelineplus.com. Hello and welcome back to the Market Leaders Podcast. I'm David Ackert, and today our guest is Adrian Lurson from JD Supra. Adrian, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Adrian, tell us about yourself, your background. We'd love to hear.
I'm an avid listener of your podcast. Well, I'll say more than that, but I am an avid listener of your podcast, and I thank you for having me on here. Adrian Lurson, I am the co-founder of JD Supra. My professional life has been in online audience building. My first job on the web was as the person who ultimately built Yahoo's first team of editors and writers. For the last, now I guess 13, 14 years, I've been working with a dear friend of mine who's an attorney to build JD Supra, which essentially takes all of the thought leadership written by lawyers and law firms and other people in sort of ancillary professional services companies in the regulatory or compliance or cybersecurity space, takes their thought leadership and puts it in front of the readers who should be reading this work, and then gives to the firms producing all of this thought leadership the data and intelligence they need to make something of that from a marketing and BD point of view.
That's great. And we're going to talk about JD Supra's role in advancing an opportunity through a business development pipeline. Before we do that, I want to set up a framework. So this is a little piece from The Shortlist, which some of you know is a book that I'm working on. It's scheduled to hit the marketplace in late 2024. And one of the things that I talk about in The Shortlist is how to advance a relationship through a pipeline. And a relationship goes through five unique stages. Now, the reason that it's important to set up this framework is because in business development, it can get a little vague. You know, we've got a hot lead. We've got a cold lead. Oh, this is a good client. This is a bad client. We use a lot of words that don't necessarily tell us exactly where we sit with a prospect. So the five stages ultimately look at what is the prospect doing? Let's get really empirical with this. If you observe what they're doing, it tells you what stage they're in. So if they're just consuming your content, then they're at that first stage of consume, which means they're not ready to talk to you. They just want to read your thought leadership. They might be following JD Supra and the content that you put out through JD Supra. But if you reached out to them and said, hey, I want to have a conversation, they would blow you off. They are just at the consume stage. The next stage is respond. Now they're actually going to respond to outreach. They have decided that what you have to share with them is actually relevant to their needs, and there's something in it for them to have a conversation with you. They want to start that relationship. So that's consume. The third stage is explore. Now the second stage is respond. The third stage is explore. Now they've responded to you and they're actually interested in a conversation where there's an exploration of needs. We're starting to hone in on the transition from marketing to business development, where they actually want to talk about some sort of transaction. The next stage is pitch. They're ready to hear your solution to their need and potentially pay you for it. And the last stage is expand. That's where you expand the relationship into additional service lines or larger scope of work or whatever it might be. So those five stages of consume, respond, explore, pitch, and expand are the framework. And what I want to talk to you about today, Adrian, is where thought leadership sits in all of this. Obviously, it's toward the top end of this framework because people consume thought leadership. But tell us a little bit about how JD Supra plays into this dynamic.
Sure thing. And I will say that I love this framework. It lays it out really well, just not only from the point of view of marketing and business development and ultimately developing and maintaining and sustaining and growing a relationship with a prospective client and turning them into a client. It's also a terrific way to map out for anybody who wants to map out habits and behaviors specifically of readers. I would say that in 2023 going into 2024, we are in a position where the value of thought leadership, of participating in this world, can be extracted from along every step of that process. So, in a bit, if we get to it, I will tell a story about our dear friend Catherine Whitaker, who has always been very, very smart about this stuff. And many, many years ago, I was having a conversation with her, and she said, with the arrival of robust data around who's reading what and what to make of that, she said to me, you know, I've always thought of thought leadership as a credentialing activity at the top of the funnel. So in other words, for people who are consuming, because I'd imagine there's a certain amount of funnel to your five steps.
Sure.
Thought leadership has always been at the top of the funnel. And now that I see the data, I see the value making its way down the funnel. So there's much to be said across the board about ways in which this works every step of the way. One of the great things about this particular endeavor, distributing people's work and publishing thought leadership to an audience who needs to see it, is that we see this value across the board in a multitude of ways. And that is a great thing. And it also makes it very, very sometimes difficult to explain what you're going to get when you do it. Because it's kind of like when you pay an electricity bill, you're getting one thing, you're getting electricity. When you implement accounting software for your firm, you're getting the ability to maintain your books. When you publish your thought leadership far and wide across the web, you're getting 10 things that you can take advantage of. And I can go on and on about this, but the long and the short of it is that across the board, there is readership by a lot of people who are simply interested in strategic insights. And then there's readership closer down the funnel with people who are looking for help with an issue that they have. There's everything in between. And then there's smart people acting on this, depending on what the activities of their readers are. And of course, there is also, as you say, expanding the relationship. One of the things that we find is a lot of clients of law firms being really excited to see their law firms work on a service like ours. They become loyal clients. They become advocates. They realize they've made a smart decision because they're reading thought leadership by their attorneys on the web.
So let's talk about advancing specifically from stage to stage. If they're simply reading thought leadership, consuming thought leadership through JD Supra and other channels, they are obviously at that consume stage. But JD Supra will tell its clients who's consuming what. And so that gives some insight into who might be ready to go from consume to respond, where they might be repeatedly consuming a particular kind of content where clearly they have an interest in that. And so it stands to reason that they would want to have a conversation about that. To your earlier point as well about going from pitch to expand, you might already have a client, you've pitched them, they've engaged your firm for this or that, but they keep reading content in an ancillary service area that you provide. So of course, this also triggers the thought, maybe we should have a conversation with them about expanding the relationship. So JD Supra really lays out a map, it sounds like, that helps people navigate through this funnel of stages. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it. The unfortunate, perhaps potentially frustrating thing is that there's so many ways in which this value unfolds that what we find ourselves doing is sort of giving anecdotal examples of each along the way. And, you know, interrupt me if I'm going on too long about this, but I'll give some examples at different points in the funnel. And I think that the overarching theme to what I'm about to say is that I think you can turn a reader into business. You can also turn readership into business insights. And there's kind of a difference between the two. There's a few things that I think happen when people try to make sense of all of this. I have a reader How can I turn that reader into something that leads to new work? That might or might not happen. But at the top of the funnel, for example, where you have a lot of people consuming information, you have a whole bunch of really interesting things. So, for example, you have people within a specific industry reading a whole bunch of content from which you can derive insights. When I first started talking about this, I gave you the example when we were talking offline about how we would look, for example, at what it is in the US many years ago, readers who worked in the energy and utility space with critical infrastructure cared about greatly. And then I would go on stage and I would talk to law firm marketers and BD folks, and I would ask everybody in the room to raise their hand if they had an energy or utility practice. And I would ask them, what's the single most important thing that the people you serve, what matters to them more than anything else right now, based on readership? And the room full of folks would throw out ideas, clean tech, FERC, renewable energy, and all of the rest. And the answer, without question, across the board, based on hundreds of thousands, millions of data points around readership, was cybersecurity. And this was very early on in the rise of cybersecurity as a discipline. And what they were reading were law firms writing about Yahoo's data breach, Walmart's data breach. They were reading law firms with a retail cybersecurity focus to strategically understand how they should deal with their biggest fear as being part of the critical infrastructure, which anybody listening in who's paying attention to how this works knows is a missed opportunity, because the energy and utility practices were not writing about it, and they certainly weren't introducing the world to their cyber practices in this regard. And this kind of data is really fascinating and absolutely on the mark, and from which you can derive terrific insights, which doesn't really have anything to do with turning one reader into a new client, but rather turning finding an opportunity in a particular space. And, you know, 18 months after I would stand on the stage and say this, the governing body of the energy and utility space issued a white paper about the fact that cybersecurity was the single biggest issue. Law firms who knew that 18 months ago could have been in a position to capitalize on that greatly and know how to respond to their existing clients. You know, that's one anecdotal example. And through your five steps and through the funnel, there are many other examples like that. And, you know, for another, you have an individual reader. That reader matters to you. They discover your work. The thing about this content in the world is that what you're actually doing is you're making people who should know you come to know you through your work, not through the name of your firm, not through your brand, not through your reputation, but through their need for information. And they discover you. And what they really ought to do at that point is become a habitual reader of your work. And they will if the work is good enough. And that is why there are things like automated connection between the content you produce and LinkedIn. It's not about just kind of running on autopilot. It's about the seamless and easy ability, for example, to somebody reads your work. They could be a good prospect. They're valuable to your activities. Connecting with them on LinkedIn, not asking anything of them except a connection, and then feeding that network your new work every time it's published. So that person now knows you, and you're putting new work in front of them. In the old days, it would have been, give me your email address and I'll put you on a newsletter and send you a client alerts. Now it's, let's be connected on LinkedIn, and every time I write something new, you'll get it. I mean, I could just go on with these examples, but across the board, step by step, there are there's value to this engagement between thought leadership and the people who are reading it. There are also, as we've discussed, home runs. And the unfortunate thing is that I think that many people work with attorneys who think that they're only home runs, and that's what they're in it for. I've written something, no one has called me and hired me. It happens, but it's not the way to do it. And we can get to that.
Well, I want to take a moment and underscore something that you just shared, which is another important aspect in putting connective tissue between these stages. So you talked about LinkedIn. Let's say, as you point out, there's someone who is at the consume stage. They're consuming your thought leadership. They haven't yet responded. You haven't yet reached out. Well, how do you reach out? Do you just say, "Hi, Adrian, I see through JD Supra in this really creepy stalkery way that you've been reading my articles. So let's have lunch." Nobody's going to want to send that email. But instead, what you can do, as you illustrated, is send them an invitation on LinkedIn. They'll say, "Oh, right, Adrian, I read his articles. How coincidental that he happens to be reaching out to me on LinkedIn. That's great. Sure, I'll connect with him." And then, of course, a few weeks later, maybe you post something else on LinkedIn. They like it. They comment on it. You comment on something that they've posted. And before you know it, you've organically moved them from consume to respond. So this is, you know, part of demystifying this process, right? Because a lot of people, like you say, think about this through the lens of home runs. I'm going to put out an article. I'm going to get a client. It actually doesn't work that way. Maybe once in a blue moon it does. But for the most part, you put out the article, a bunch of people read it, and then you're smart about looking at, okay, who read it and what are the next steps that feel natural, don't feel too aggressive, that I can take to move them through these five stages of consume, respond, explore, pitch, expand. You alluded earlier to another example that you saw from Catherine Whitaker. Tell us about that one.
I will. And I'm actually going to give you three examples really quickly, and the third one will be that. I have a general anxiety to stay focused here, but there's so much to say. We could do a podcast on just the activity around one of your five. But I'll get to Catherine. In response to what you just said, I want to say for two examples. We see, for example, somebody writes something very smart and publish it to do with legal developments in a particular industry. Then we see the C-suite in that industry sharing amongst their own networks on LinkedIn this piece and saying things about it, having a conversation in public about the work. You know, this is really smart. This is really good. Our company is going to adopt a policy like this. And I want all of my colleagues in this industry to read this. Typical thing. That's happening in public, and there are a handful of things that could happen next. One of them is that the author could simply join the conversation on LinkedIn. The other is we could do exactly what we just described, which is connect with that person, and it becomes part of the larger network. And so begins a long, unfolding relationship that can take the time it needs to be a good one. But sometimes one of the things that happens is somebody says, "This is really great. And there's this one part that I still don't understand, which this article doesn't cover." That is the next piece of writing by the person whose work is being shared on LinkedIn. So there's this really tight and endless supply of value in these engagements, including just very basically it being a source of new work. Source of new work by what your readers are telling you they care about. So it's really, really focused and on topic and responsive. So that's one example. The other to this example of creepiness, which we have heard about ever since analytics have been available. I'm aware of a BD person in a firm whose responsibility is to focus on high value clients. And so you see that your clients with whom you are doing work of an IP nature or something to do with labor and employment or commercial real estate or what have you, every time you send them information or every time you see them turn up on your JD Super Analytics, they're actually reading about cybersecurity. You don't have to call somebody and say, "I see from the analytics that you are interested in cybersecurity." It's perfectly reasonable, as this person does, to simply get in touch with your contact and say, "You are a high value client and we know that people care about, for example, cybersecurity or blockchain or what have you. And because you're high value and because you have a legal team dispersed around multiple locations, we actually want to give you a webinar and we just want to talk through your concerns about cybersecurity." I mean, it's like a perfect expansion to use your language. That's how the language expands, the relationship expands, based on old and new content, looking at the readership of the old content and using it to develop new content in order to support the growth of a relationship with a high-value client. So this all comes together in this remarkable thing that Catherine did. And a couple of years ago, probably too many at this point to mention, time passes so quickly. She and I spoke on stage a few times and she would tell the story. So she's a remarkably brilliant marketer and BD person, as we all know. And her way of telling the story is so good. It starts with this idea that if you are in a law firm and a partner asks you to do something, you're not going to say no. You're just not going to say no. But you're going to prioritize when to say yes. And she used data from the very beginning to do this. So this was in the early days of opportunity zones. And, you know, she had that inevitable situation where a partner appeared on the threshold of the door to her office and said, we really need to double down on content to do with opportunity zones. So this idea of insights from readers, she came to us and said, opportunity zones, what do you think? And the chart just pointed at a 3-month uphill, an ascending interest in opportunity zones, which indicated this is absolutely worth your time. So the data supported the firm spending money on content to do with opportunity zones. And since the data supported it, they spent the money on the videos. They started back in the day when it was a really robust thing to do, a Twitter channel dedicated entirely to opportunity zones. And they wrote this content. And I think that many marketers would sort of say, that's data-driven marketing, and they'll stop there. Data supported producing the content, and we did. But Catherine, being brilliant, looked at the data and discovered that regional telecoms were reading it. And the firm that she was at the time had plenty of regional telecoms. And so what she actually did is she let the data recalibrate the campaign at that point. And it became something in which they were producing messaging and insights and commentary that relationship partners and the firm itself could deliver to their clients, to clients that they were not working with on opportunity zones, to let them know that they were in that space and ready and willing to help. And that's what led to new work. And I think that that example covers quite a few bases in your journey from consuming to expanding. And it's just brilliant. There are plenty of instances in which somebody writes something and write it at the right time in the right place for somebody to say, this is exactly my issue. And I'm going to write you a check and I want you to join my team and solve this for me. But the people who are really succeeding at this today and doing a good job are the ones who are not waiting for that. They're leveraging what's in front of them and using it to support the activities that they would otherwise do anyway to grow business for the firm.
Well, you make a strong argument for not only thought leadership and the importance of putting material out there, but also for analytics. Who's reading it? Who's consuming it? And what are the patterns that we can take advantage of so that we can ultimately align that to a business development success? Adrian, I want to thank you for sharing some of these examples with us. And I'd love to end on a suggestion that you might have for folks, anything that sort of helps them think about business development in general. You know, what's a way to kind of progress through this kind of a framework, or to approach attitudinally this notion of thought leadership, analytics, and ultimately wins?
I love the way you asked that question, and I thank you for it. I will say this, and I will try to say it quickly. You and I have spoken in the past, and I quoted you via Mike O'Hara, our friend who we all miss, who once said to me, just sort of off the cuff, full of off the cuff brilliant remarks, he said that it's not BD until you're sitting in front of somebody and they're telling you what their problem is and you're telling them how you can help them solve their problem. The rest of the time it's marketing until that occurs. And I think that that's an interesting notion to hold on to as you think through this content. One of the things that we did recently, because our analytics and our dashboards keeps track of the nature of the value of the work and its engagement. So we know we have piles and piles of content that have instigated some kind of business development opportunity, which is different than content that has instigated a PR and comms opportunity by appearing in the Wall Street Journal or the New Yorker or the New York Times or what have you. So these are specifically engagements that are somewhere along the business development conversation. And we've asked ourselves, what is it that this work has in common that people can learn from? So it's a tricky thing because I keep on saying there are no such things as home runs, but there are home runs and we can learn from them and we can apply them to everything else. And there's a shift in the mentality of the thought leaders and authors that are producing this BD focused, BD driven content. Everybody in marketing talks about the importance of storytelling, and I've always scratched my head and trying to understand how that applies here to writing about complex legal issues. And to a certain extent, the story is in the perceived relationship between the author and their readers. And even the smartest attorneys who are writing about this stuff, oftentimes the story is them. And the ones that are producing content that instigates this kind of BD opportunity to follow up on have shifted the story away from themselves to the people they're trying to reach. And it's a mentality that comes from asking questions like, who may I serve best? What are their issues? What has happened to them? And how can I possibly solve their issues? And then they embody that, the answers to those questions in their entire approach, from the title to the body of the work to everything, where they are actually forcing that conversation that Mike O'Hara quoted you saying, which is, it's only marketing until somebody's actually stating their problem and you're offering their solution. So your solution. So the work actually takes that on, and specifically addresses the target audience that they're trying to reach and specifically addresses the issue that they're having. This happened. This is why it's going to impact the way you do business. Here are the three ways that you can handle that. Very, very focused on reader and reader need, not on, you know, I'm really good about talking about tax law. It's a huge difference.
That's right. So who is the hero of the story at the end of the day? To the extent that you insist it's you, you're limiting your mindset. You have to remember that business development is ultimately about the client and helping them. Make them the hero of the story, and you'll find that it ends much more happily for you.
Yeah, and one of the things, I'm sorry to prolong this, but I'll say really quickly, one of the things that sort of spurred you and I talking was your amazing conversation with Samantha McKenna, Show Me That You Know Me. That's what we're talking about here. And we're talking about the LMA panels that everyone goes to, in which the general counsel says, know my business. And the thought leaders who embody Show Me That You Know Me and embody very explicitly, I am talking to this person about this issue, are the ones who are being found by those people with that issue and getting those calls. And whether or not your timing is perfect so that somebody who has issues around an employee handbook for a subsidiary in Canada is online at the exact same time is one thing or another, but it's certainly helps people looking for that information find it better, and focuses your readership. You start being read by people that you actually should be read by.
That's right. And that's the beauty of thought leadership, isn't it? I mean, yes, if you happen to talk to someone at exactly the right time when they have the need, then certainly you can jump from the consumer to the pitch stage, or you can jump from the respondent to the pitch stage. But ultimately, what you want to do and what you use thought leadership for is to stay top of mind so that you're there when that timing occurs, not only there when that timing occurs.
That's exactly right. And I think that it can't be stated enough. If the people who are reading you aren't people who need you right away, they are still telling you something because they are readers within industries and they have a very particular interest that informs your business development decisions about that industry because you're seeing what they actually care about as expressed by their readership patterns.
Very good. Well, Adrian, thanks so much for your work. Thanks for what you provide to people through JD Supra. Those kinds of services are so critical because without it, there's no distribution and there's no analytics. And so there's no way to go through this process strategically. So we certainly appreciate our relationship with you and appreciate your time today sharing some thoughts with the audience.
Thank you. And as I said at the beginning, I really do appreciate you and love this podcast. I listen to it every time there's a new issue, as you know. And thank you for having me on.
It's a pleasure.
Today's episode was brought to you by Pipeline Plus. We solve business development problems for professionals around the world. Visit pipelineplus.com to learn more about our technology and coaching solutions.